Do you remember what it was like when you were scheduled to play a ball game or give a recital or make a speech and somebody called to say, by the way, your old coach, your master teacher, will be in the audience tonight watching. However well you had meant to perform before the call, you resolved afterwards to try even harder for the sake of one or two people, special people, who would know the difference between best and not quite. Well, that's the psychology being used in the scripture Mike Wiggins read to you a few minutes ago. The writer names certain heroes of faith, from Abraham through Moses to all the anonymous saints who suffered and died for what they believed. And then he says, with all this cloud of witnesses around us, we should be encouraged to live heroic lives ourselves. It's as if history were a great encircling gallery from which noble lives look down on our lives and pass silent judgment. Sometimes they make us stronger simply by putting us to shame. Browning has a poem that mentions the Italian composer Verdi conducting his poorest opera in Florence. He knew it was weak, that he had not given it sufficient time. But the non-critical audience got up and applauded and threw roses at him. He stood there drinking in the praise until he looked around to where his great predecessor, Rossini, sat looking at him in disappointment, as if to say, oh, Verdi, this is so far beneath what you should do. Once in a while, we need some greater life by which to measure our own, to know how we're doing. So this morning, I would like to complete a sermon from several months ago when I defined the word saint from the New Testament as an ordinary person doing good things, not the medieval notion that a saint is one who leads armies in crusades or works miracles and is canonized by the church, but people like ourselves who have moments of courage and conviction. To know what the average, ordinary person can do out of some compelling belief is a good antidote to a dull and selfish life. Let's meet some people like that, remembering how many more never get any publicity at all. There is a rabbi in California who has dedicated his life to reminding us of all the Gentile families who risked their lives to save Jews from Hitler. Ordinary Christians who cared. And if you have forgotten, or in this new day never learned, it was risky. On January the 29th, 1943, the Nazis executed 13 Polish citizens who had saved Jews, and one of them was 2 years old. They killed 96 Polish men in the village of Biarla for hiding and feeding Jews. In another village, they pushed 23 men, women, and children into a barn and burned it because they protected Jews. And yet people like ourselves, moved by compassion and simple decency, kept trying to defy that monstrous evil. A Dutch village in which every non-Jewish family concealed at least one Jew. A priest who protested the horror of the Holocaust by joining Jews on the deportation trains and was punished so brutally that he died on the way to Dachau. Another priest who turned his monastery into a rescue agency that issued baptismal certificates and passports to save Jews. And when he was praised, responded, "Do you think I could have hidden those Jewish families without the knowledge and cooperation of the grocer, the milkman, the policeman?" "If evil," he said, "has many faces, never forget that goodness has many forms." Well, in days when we have been horrified by stories out of Garden City and Sterling, Ardmore, Oklahoma, and Pampa, Texas, and Springer, New Mexico, we need a corrective. Headlines and television news understandably concentrate on spectacular evil and HUD scandals and creatures who can laugh about what a nice day it is for golf when they have just been arrested for cold-blooded murder. Simple daily goodness has a million forms. If we forget that, our estimate of human life is warped. So my modest gift to you this morning is a couple of other stories about simple daily goodness. One from this country, first. Some years ago, Millard and Linda Fuller walked out of a successful law practice in Alabama and founded Habitat for Humanity, a program in which volunteer Christians build houses for those who otherwise would never be able to have a home. Speaking at Duke University not long ago about his theology of the hammer, Fuller told the audience what had happened in Charlotte, North Carolina, the year before. "We decided to build an entire city block of houses, 14 of them in all, in only 5 days. We sent out a call. Folks came from 28 states and 2 Canadian provinces. Former President Jimmy Carter and Rosalynn joined us. People came from 86 Charlotte churches. It was really something. But you know what made me just about as proud as anything else? After we gathered the first morning and had our devotional like we always do, we grabbed our hammers and went to work. And there went an Episcopal priest and the most conservative Baptist preacher in Charlotte to begin hammering together. When you're on the roof of a house, working for God, it don't matter if you're a conservative or a liberal, and I might add, whether you use good grammar. All that matters, Fuller said, is if you can hit a nail on the head. Those two preachers didn't know each other before they started work on that house. Now they're good friends. That's the theology of the hammer. That theology is now being practiced in 277 cities in the United States, in 3 Canadian provinces, and in 26 other countries around the world. Somehow, I missed it when it came to Wichita. I read later a list of volunteers and found one of my English professor colleagues had given his day of work as a layman from St. James. I wish I had been with him. Faith doesn't make any difference until somebody does things like that from time to time. In far-off countries, all around the planet, there are millions of people who do similar good things quietly and without fanfare. We happen to have heard a great deal about one of them, a woman so loving that it is really hard for us to comprehend her life, a woman so simple and ordinary that when journalists try to interpret her, they almost always fail. One writer tried to figure out why the woman we know as Mother Teresa went off to live the way she does by interviewing her old schoolmates and colleagues from the time when she was a high school principal. To his surprise, few of them could remember her. And the ones who did only commented about how ordinary she was. Her interviews are usually disappointing, her language too simple and too full of truisms and religious cliches for the complex 20th century mind. For all our beautiful churches and high church attendance in this country, most of us do not take the life of Christ as seriously as sermons suggest. And we have difficulty understanding the thought and action of a person who does. It seems to us somehow quaint. So most interviewers have found Mother Teresa rather dull in her childlike goodness. Except for Malcolm Muggeridge, the closest thing we have these days to a C.S. Lewis, and a man who, like Lewis, was first a skeptic and then a believer and finally a highly articulate defender of the Christian faith. In an interview with Mother Teresa on the BBC, he said to her, "Our fellow men, or many of them, perhaps including myself, have lost their way. You seem to have found your way. How do you help us find it?" Her answer was predictably simple: by getting them in touch with people. For in the people, they will find God. But Muggeridge knew, as perhaps she didn't, how odd that would sound to most of us, to tell a retail clerk, a junior high school principal, a business executive, that the people he or she meets every day are the true avenue to communion with God. Sounds incredible. So he said, "You mean that the road to faith and the road to God is via our fellow human beings?" She answered, "Because we cannot see Christ, We cannot express our love to him, but our neighbors we can always see. And we can do to them what, if we saw him, we would like to do to Christ. In the slums, in the broken body, in the children, we see Christ and we touch him. She had read and remembered a verse from Scripture. For as much as you do it unto one of the least of these, you do it unto me. There may never have been a more striking moment, a more memorable contrast than the scene which took place in the Gold Room in Oslo a few years ago. The rich and the beautiful gathered to award the highest humanitarian honor to a tiny, wrinkled woman in a white habit who has a theology so simple that it indicts and unsettles almost everybody who comes into her presence. Her belief in human dignity is so stubborn and persistent that she built an infirmary for the dying so that regardless of their anonymous life on the streets, they could at least die with dignity. I have lived like an animal, one of them said, but now I am going to die like an angel. The little nun does not try, apparently, to convert anyone to her faith. She simply responds to people in need. She doesn't understand why there should be a fuss about it or a Nobel Prize, and she doesn't have much to say. One evening on a Canadian talk show with a Nobel Prize-winning biologist who knew all about DNA breakthroughs and discussed at rather tedious length the possibility of everlasting biological life, she sat quietly until the host finally prodded her to respond to all those mind-bending observations. I believe, she said, in love and compassion. One couldn't be sure. Either she was so profoundly wise that it was hard to take, or she was too stupid to make a sophisticated response. The biologist admitted later that her remark took him as close as he had ever come to a change of life. By refusing to be drawn into a world alien to her own visions and concerns, she had brought him into her world and forced him to use his imagination to see himself and his science through her eyes. She represents something that just doesn't register very well on our sophisticated minds. A few years ago, just after the Beirut bombing by Israel that killed so many civilians, she was helping put two wounded little girls into an ambulance when a reporter asked her if she thought this was really worth much, when there were 100 other children in another bombed-out hospital whom she wasn't able to help. She said, disconcertingly, "Don't you think it is a good thing to help these little ones?" He hadn't expected that kind of simplicity, But without flinching, he asked his question again. The other hospital has many wounded children too. Can you call your efforts successful if you leave them unattended? She ignored his question again and answered her own. I think it is a good thing to help these children. And her shoulders sank under the weight of the stretcher as she tried to lift it. Muggeridge tried to ask her once if there weren't already too many people in India, and if it was worth salvaging a few abandoned children who might die soon or live badly anyway. She could not comprehend the question. From her point of view, all life is sacred. Any social theory that contradicts that premise to her is mad. We seldom see a life so unified and so serenely sure of what it ought to do with itself. I suppose that she supports the teaching of her church against birth control by pill or contraceptive, and I am in total disagreement with that prohibition. But her life is extraordinary, so reckless in its total surrender that the most comfortable response we can make to her is that she must be crazy. But I think not. Her unconditional love for the most wretched human beings on earth is the model for sainthood. No miracles, no brilliant reflections on human relationships, just an indomitable compassion that will not turn away from need. She said the most wonderful thing one time. So mundane, I'm afraid that it hardly registers at first. So please listen carefully. A group of reporters were saying to her, Mother Teresa, there is so much misery and suffering in the world. How can you go on doing what you do when it's just a drop in the bucket? You must know that. Why do you bother? And she said, I do what I can with what I have where I am. The shadow of Christ lies forever across human life. This time, it is cast by a woman.